Hello, Iron Maiden fans. We are here to discuss, of course, the Flight 666, an Air Force One spanning the globe all over, touching every corner of the earth. This is Sean Muse, one of your hosts, joined by our wonderful founder and creator, the garden maker of all things in this podcast, Mr. Rowan Pereira. Hello. Hello.
Hello, Sean. What's up? It's been quite a while, I guess, before, we started doing this episode. I think the last one was, about a month back. So, yeah, it's great to be back. And I mentioned, I guess, in the last episode, at the end of it, I guess, that we'd be having a special guest. So, for this episode, we picked someone who loves Iron Maiden just as much as us. Someone who also has a podcast out there, and I think someone who's just a brilliant podcaster for that matter. So I'd like to welcome Dan Lamberger from the Iron Maiden Review on our show. Welcome, Dan.
Hey, thank you guys. Thanks for Wayne. Thank you, Sean. Great to be here.
All right, cool. So like Sean said, this episode is dedicated to Flight 666, the movie, the film that basically talks about Iron Maiden's Somewhere Back in Time World Tour, one of their most successful tours till date, and the first time they introduced their own private jet, that is Air Force One. So, first let's get started with the film. The film's directed by Sam Dunn, who, if you know, is a huge metalhead, and I think he's a brilliant documentary maker. Some of his earlier films would be Metal, A Headbanger's Journey, which is a brilliant movie. I've seen it myself. And Global Metal, another brilliant movie, which talks, both the movies basically talk about metal and its perception in different countries around the world. So I think he's done an absolutely brilliant job on both the movies. And I think Flight 666 is also one of his best documentaries to date. So he's an anthropologist, so basically he studies different cultures around the world and stuff. So he took metal as a culture and he studied it. And it's got a brilliant perspective from different fans from different countries around the world. So great movie. Moving to Flight 666. This movie for me is, I'm not just saying it as an Iron Maiden fan, because when I went to see this movie in the theaters, I took my sister with me, who's not much of an Iron Maiden fan. And she thought the movie was really cool. So you don't need to be an Iron Maiden fan to actually appreciate this movie. It's just a brilliant movie. The look that you get, into the band, which you generally wouldn't backstage. I mean, Maiden, like Sam says at the beginning of the movie, Maiden are a private band. They wouldn't like cameras following them 24/7. So this film sort of gives you a look into what Maiden's doing backstage and on tour, stuff that you generally wouldn't get to see. So in those aspects, I think this movie is absolutely brilliant. What about you, Sean?
Well, it's funny you should say that, because about the privacy issue and so on. For anyone that's new to the podcast, I'm in a rather well-known Iron Maiden tribute band called Run to the Hills. And really through that and being just a very lucky individual, I've spent many different tours hanging out with Iron Maiden and have met a lot of the people in the film. And actually, if you look real hard, you can catch me in the New Jersey segment, just so you know. And bear in mind, the camera adds about 300 pounds, but that's a whole different subject. But when I watch the film, the accuracy is dead on. I mean, the people actually are not really any out of character from the band themselves, going through the production team and everyone involved in putting on the tour. The individuals have always been actually very gregarious and welcoming. Of all the bands and crews I've met, the Iron Maiden crew, it's very much like a family. You've had the same people forever, most of which are from England. And I remember catching Headbanger's Journey, and of course, who can forget the interview with Mayhem on that one? That's just one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. If you've seen that, Rowan, Dan, it's pretty funny. I agree. I've had actually some individuals who I would call them lukewarm. They're not Maiden fans, but they can appreciate Iron Maiden who they are, and they found the film very entertaining. I think it's really neat that you can choose to either watch the documentary with the film's concert clips mixed in, or just the concert clips. So that's a nice feature. I have it on Blu-ray disc, and that menu option's available. How about you, Dan?
Yeah, you know, I just think it's very cool that if there's anybody out there that hasn't seen the film yet, you know, this is a full feature-length documentary. You know, it's a little under 2 hours long, and I just think they did a great job of giving you a behind-the-scenes look, but it didn't have that feel of reality TV to it, which personally makes me sick. You know, I don't want to watch Ozzy Osbourne or Gene Simmons padding around in their underwear in their mansions, you know, begging their wives for sex. You know, that's my life. I don't want that. You know, I want a little bit of that mystique. And I think they held on to that in the film, but gave you a good mix of what goes on behind the scenes with, you know, the fans, the crew, the band. They did a really good balance with it.
Yeah, I quite agree with that, actually. I like the Aussie part particularly.
I'm just impressed that Dan can go around asking Sharon Osbourne and, you know, and Shannon, whatever her name is, for sex. So that's impressive.
Yeah, I usually have better luck with Shannon than I do Sharon, but, you know, I think that's good. I think that's the way the universe was meant to be.
Yeah, but Sharon's a dried up old bitch. I mean, who would want her anyway?
She always throws eggs at me, so, you know.
Hey, I grew up in the 80s, and Shannon is Tweed, right? She was a playmate or something? I don't know what she was.
Shannon Tweed.
She was in an awesome ski movie. I remember that from years ago. That was real filmmaking.
Let me see those hands out there. Simply. Oh, yeah. Take a look at yourselves. Just a baby.
Moving back to Iron Maiden. Okay, fine.
Before we get
deeper into the film, Dan, would you like to tell us a little about your podcast that you have going?
So in terms of my podcast, before I start talking about that, I just have to say that I was really inspired by the Iron Maiden podcast and particularly Rowayne, the episode that you did where you interviewed Blaze Bailey, I thought was fantastic. And then I really have enjoyed when you brought Sean in as your permanent co-host. I like the perspective that he brings, not only as, you know, being a vocalist in his tribute band Run to the Hills, but, you know, this is a guy that's had the opportunity to meet the band and hang out with them. And I'm a big Iron Maiden trivia geek, and Sean really knows his stuff, especially about, you know, the very beginnings and origins of the band and, you know, when they were first recording. So that's always impressed me. And, you know, I loved you guys' podcast and wanted to try and do something in the same vein so that I could reach out to other Iron Maiden fans and, you know, have that sense of community and connection with other fans but I didn't want to just rehash what you guys have already done. You know, that's always been my challenge. I love what you're doing and I respect it. I wanted to see what I could bring to the table, you know, on my own that was unique. So I came up with the Iron Maiden review, where I am reviewing in chronological order of their release every Iron Maiden album. So each podcast is devoted to one album. I've done the first five, and the next one in the pipeline is Somewhere in Time, one of my personal favorite albums. So that's where I'm at.
Okay. I actually happened to listen to a few of Dan's episodes, and I think they're absolutely brilliant. I think the last good podcast that I listened to that was dedicated to Iron Maiden was the Maiden Fan Podcast. But you know, we haven't heard from Mike in a long time. But I really like what Dan has come up with, especially your Number of the Beast episode, which I thought was absolutely brilliant. So cheers for that. And
thank you.
Let's move on. And by the way, you said you love the you know, the trivia that Sean has about the band. It's because this man is absolutely lucky. Not only does he sound like Bruce Dickinson, but he's actually been on I guess practically all the tours from the Summer in Time tour, I guess. They even replaced Iron Maiden at one of their shows on the Virtual 11 tour, I think. Sean, can you tell us a little about that?
Well, I would like to thank both of you for making me feel like a god for 2 minutes. And I must say that, Dan, you did a wonderful job reading the script I wrote for him before we started. I've been fortunate enough to, you know, being granted access and meeting, hang out with the band. Not going back to Summer in Time. That's really when that was the first concert tour I caught. Really going back to the mid-90s is when that all started. And yes, we actually did. We filled in for Iron Maiden on August 1st, 1998 on the Virtual 11 tour. We're the only bands ever done that. And it just, you know, it was a case of being in the right place at the right time type of thing. And it was a blast. I was in Hartford, Connecticut, over here in the East Coast. One thing I must say about Rowain is he has a tremendous amount of insight. I like what you do about digging in and getting the inspiration, for example, to the lyrics on each songs. He goes way deep. He actually goes and seeks out the source material in many cases, and he'll talk about how that had an impact, for example, on Steve Harris. And it's just fun how, like, you know, as we talk to different Iron Maiden fans, the two of us being Maiden fans, and you are, of course, Dan, that you get all these different perspectives and so on. As far as Flight 666, if we want to just return to that for a moment, one thing that I noticed about the concert footage is I think it's advantageous that they show clips from all around the world for each of the songs. I think it adds different flavors. The fans all over the world, of course, especially the ones that are at these shows, have that built-in curiosity to see if they're on the, you know, in the movie, or at least their crowd is on the movie. And that's kind of interesting too. And Roy, I'm trying to remember. Did you catch the tour? Now I'm talking specifically about the concert stops that are captioned in the movie. Did you catch? I can't remember if you caught one of the first two on that tour.
Yeah, I actually got Maiden, I guess, on the first show that they opened the tour with, which was the Mumbai show in India, and that was the first time they were doing our city. Actually, the previous time Iron Maiden came to India was in 2007, and they did Bangalore. And I had some really important exams back then, because of which I couldn't make it. So that was a real bummer, and I was, you know, I was just waiting for the next opportunity when Maiden would announce an Indian show. And when they did, I just went crazy, in fact. So I remember that day very clearly, because that probably was the best day of my life. And I mean, to open the tour in India, that was some sort of you know, I felt proud that they opened the tour in India. I mean, as stupid as it sounds, it was an absolute it was just an absolutely brilliant day for me. I mean, my day couldn't get better. If you ask me, that would probably be the best day of my life. You know, when I remember Aces High, you know, coming in, and Steve and Adrian and Yannick and Dave all running out, and there was this mad adrenaline rush that I had. I was exhausted and dehydrated that day, but when these guys came running out, I couldn't care about anything. It was just a crazy adrenaline rush that I had, and I still remember that day. And the part that really got to me was when they played Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner. I was just blown away, because that's one of my favorite Maiden songs, and to hear that live was I think this is the last was the last time they would play Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner, and so I was lucky enough to catch it. So yeah, and that was the first stop of the tour, and it's even on the concert DVD. The Bandra Kurla Complex, Mumbai, where they're doing Aces High. So yeah, Dan, were you able to catch them on any shows on the Somewhere Back in Time World Tour?
Yeah, I had a similar experience. I was fortunate enough to see them when they played Concord, California, which is just outside of San Francisco. And the morning that I woke up to go see that concert, I had what was probably the worst cold flu combination that I've ever had in my life. And I decided, of course, you know, that I was going to go to the concert. But more than that, I decided that I was going to have a good time. And I did. It just absolutely blew me away. I left that concert euphoric. I didn't care how bad I felt. I didn't care that I had a cold or the flu. So, you know, this DVD and, you know, the live CD, they're great mementos of that concert. And I have to agree with you about the Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner. You know, to be able to go out and hold a stadium or hold an amphitheater with thousands upon thousands of people in it, in the palm of your hand, especially during those slow parts, you know, that's amazing. And on top of that, the band, to me, really appeared to be totally into that song. I think they really enjoyed playing it live.
Absolutely. When Bruce Dickinson was asked in a radio interview, which was his favorite song that he wanted to do live, and he said it was Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner.
No, he didn't. He said, Mariner.
You know, you do remind me of Bruce Dickinson in a lot of ways.
Which, by the way, my concert stop in the movie is New Jersey, just outside of New York City. And that's the clip they show in the movie from that, Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And, you know, and here I go. I'm going to piggyback. That was also a highlight for me, seeing that song, because it had been quite a while. I think last time I saw that live was on the Summer in Time tour. That was the last time they played it, I think. And very, very special, a very special moment. So one thing, too, is, and the reason why we're talking about these recollections we're having is there's a lot of Iron Maiden fans out there at these shows. I mean, these are massive events. Some of these, I don't even know how many were at your show, but it seems like it's, we're talking about a stadium environment where you were, Rowan. The thing is this movie kind of captures two things that are very unique. One, Iron Maiden with Bruce Dickinson piloting, of course, all those logistics that are just extraordinary, doing something that had never been done before and doing it very well, by taking the 757 throughout the world and doing the shows right out of the jet. And the other thing, too, on the flip side with all the Iron Maiden fans is, for us, it's kind of a memoir of being part of a very unique experience. Because granted, Iron Maiden's been on many tours, and probably anyone that's listening to this, and hopefully they have been to an Iron Maiden concert or multiple concerts somewhere. Yet again, these shows were just very special, because they were traveling such tremendous distances between each event, and all the behind-the-scenes stuff really is what makes this a unique experience. Granted, they're doing a throwback set list, which was, again, especially for people that weren't able to catch it back in the day, is a wonderful way to enjoy these what people would probably call classic material played live again contiguously and throughout. And the other thing too is I think the way they were hopping around in that jet really added a lot of excitement. If you see throughout the movie and the local media, every time they were flying into a town, it became a news story just because of what it is they were doing. And something about Iron Maiden that most people need to remember is they have always been pioneers. They've done a lot of things, and this goes right down to how they do their production, and there's a whole host of things that Iron Maiden came along and really forged ahead and set an example for many other bands to follow. All the things like their marketing and their how they did the logo and merchandising, and now they've set a whole new standard with what you can accomplish going throughout the world if you put your mind to it.
Absolutely. I mean, Iron Maiden always set the benchmark for other bands to follow, and I have to agree with you on that part, because Lars Ulrich himself said it. That most of Metallica's merchandising is based on the same lines as that of Iron Maiden. So it's Iron Maiden are always setting a new benchmark somewhere. And this like you said again, it was the really interesting part about this tour was Air Force One, and that Bruce Dickinson himself was piloting the jet, which is very impressive. And Bruce does a ton of other activities apart from just being the vocalist for the greatest heavy metal band in the world. And, he's also a radio host, by the way. He used to do the BBC rock show, which he doesn't do anymore, of course. So obviously, that added to the excitement of the tour. And one of the, cooler things about this tour was Maiden were visiting many places which they had never played in. So it was definitely a new territory for them, and so the excitement was all the more. Like, they played India before, but when they were doing Bombay, the excitement was still the same, because they were playing some of their older songs which the fans would really love to listen to. So again, the excitement never died down, I guess. For the first show, we had, a greater turn-up. And for the second show, we had a smaller turn-up. But that was because of the capacity of the venue. But the excitement was still the same. Because if you ask me, I remember each and every moment of that concert. Because it probably, like I said, was the best day of my life. So, again, Maiden were doing something completely different, which I guess, very few bands can actually do. So that was,
if you look around, it's, I always ask myself, who else out there is doing this right now? At this stage in their career, who else is going out there and continuing to grow the band and seek out new markets? And they're able to do so successfully. I mean, for this tour, 21 cities, 12 countries, 4 continents. I don't know who else is out there doing that right now.
Absolutely. And if you look at the age factor, which is a major part, not only are they getting old, but they also have families. So Air Force One definitely helped a lot in those aspects. And to do 91 shows when you're 50-something, I think that's absolutely brilliant. And these are large-scale shows. We're not talking about, small venues. These are really massive shows. So I guess, like you said, nobody else out there is actually doing it anymore. And so, these are the things that sort of, make you want to love and respect Iron Maiden even more.
Yeah!
let's talk about the I think this is kind of relevant. Now they're doing another version of this type of touring. They're actually out on tour right now. I'm actually more excited about this one because not only are they doing their unique behind the scenes of flying around again and so on, but they're featuring predominantly newer material. As a matter of fact, I think there's a heavy emphasis on stuff that's 2000 or later. And I think that's very exciting. So really what this movie, this documentary shows, it's not really, it's not a one-off event. It's kind of the beginning of a template that Iron Maiden is using to go on tour now. Because going back to the age issue, and please be careful because some of us are just a little bit older at this point. The Iron Maiden of the 80s, they would hop on a bus and they would literally play, I mean, hundreds of dates on a tour. And that's very physically taxing. And it was a wonderful thing for them. But as we all know, it was also a destructive thing for them, too. And nearly finished Bruce off for good just after the Power Slave tour and so on. I think not even so much in response to the age issue, because these guys, I could tell you from experience and being around them, they're in better physical condition than most of my friends are and probably most of your friends are. So I don't think they have a stamina issue. But the thing I do notice, this is something I have noticed a lot, especially in the last few years, is they are all family men predominantly, and their children have gotten older and their lives have gotten more developed outside of the bands. And I think really the reason they did this was more, I would say it was a life balance issue where they wanted to find a way to get out on the road and tour, but still have the opportunity to connect with their family throughout the year and be with them. Whereas in the past, once they went on tour, that was it. Unless their family was in a bus with them, they weren't going to talk to anybody or seen them for quite a while. So I think they've struck a wonderful balance with continuing the Iron Maiden. I call it a legacy at this point because, I mean, it's just, you know, what else can you say? And I'm happy to say, of course, connected to that, is that they just won a Grammy Award here in the United States for a brand new song called El Dorado. So please go check that out. And for those of you throughout the world, that's a big deal here in the United States in the music industry. And I think that's something that's just going to add yet more excitement to the tour and drive in even more media exposure. So stay tuned for that. Dan, let's go back to you for a second. Could you share with us, how do you feel about the documentary style of the film versus just the actual concert footage in the film?
Well, I really do like the documentary part. You know, you guys were mentioning Sam Dunn earlier, and you know, he also worked with, I think his name's Scott McFadden, and not only did they do Metal: A Headbanger's Journey, but I got to put in a little plug for one of their most recent projects, which is Rush Beyond the Lighted Stage, which you know, as the name implies, is a documentary on Canadian power trio Extraordinaire Rush, which is absolutely fantastic. I don't know if you guys have had a chance
I have it. It's actually, I'm not going to lie, it's my favorite one by them yet. And interestingly, you don't hear his voice at all. And I'm a huge Rush fan, of course. And Rowan, do you have that one? Have you heard that one or seen that one? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I've heard of that one, but I haven't had the chance to see it because it's not available in India. Actually, it's not. It hasn't released here yet, unfortunately. But yeah, if I do get a chance to see it, I'm definitely gonna look it up.
I'll bring it to you. I'm gonna come over for a. We'll come over one day and get out and do some fun stuff in the town. I'll bring you a copy.
We'll have some good curry.
Yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. So, you know, the documentary was great. I liked the concert DVD. If I had one critique of the concert portion of the DVD, and it's not just this one, but it seems to be most of the concert DVDs that come out right now, there's so many different camera angles and so much great stuff that they can do with technology. You know, sometimes I wish the camera would stay on a particular shot for more than 3 seconds rather than, you know, buzzing around like a bumblebee. You know, I'd love to see it zoom in on Adrian when he's doing a solo and stick with him for that whole solo.
Absolutely. Oh, I just wanted to say that. I so agreed with you on that part. And I think some of the blame goes to Steve Harris on that part because he's responsible for a major part of the editing, especially when it comes to their concerts. So, yeah, and the worst part is, I guess it's more or less when Adrian's playing his solo that the guitar is never focusing on Adrian. I guess you and I look at the Powerslave solo on this DVD. I can't see Adrian playing it except for the last few bits of it. So, yeah, I would agree with you on that part.
Well, there is a scientific explanation for that, gentlemen.
Enlighten me, please.
Well, it's simply that the cameras are blinded by the beauty of Adrian's playing.
Oh, of course.
One up with that. Absolutely, yeah. Have to agree with you on that one. I would say Adrian's best solo for me on this tour would be, I guess, the Rime of the Ancient Mariner one. I love the way he's improvised it, so I think that sounded really great for me. What about you, Dan?
A favorite solo on this one?
Yep.
Oh, you know, I don't know if it's necessarily the solo, but I think the entire tone of the song, Rime of the Ancient Mariner, is a little different. It strikes me as being a, you know, kind of a heavier version, and I really enjoy it. You know, it's tough to beat the live version on Live After Death because, you know, that's a version of that song that I've basically lived with since 1985. But just the entire tone of Ancient Mariner was good.
Absolutely. What about you, Sean?
I would have to say that going back to the lightning fast edits and the moving around and so on, what I find is that the attention span of us as a culture has changed a lot since the 80s. And really the 80s was when things really started going into hyperdrive with cameras and footage. I, as much as I appreciate the visuals, and I'm a big high definition person, I love Blu-ray. And for anyone that can get Blu-ray, get it. You probably do already, but it's chalk and cheese versus DVD. And especially for something where you want to really feel like you're in the moment, the sound is very important. One thing I noticed about this concert film is that the sound is terrific. And there's two reasons for that. First off, the mix, if I have it correct, is by Mr. Caveman Kevin Shirley again, who is a very proficient at the knobs. And the other reason is the format of Blu-ray allows you to have uncompressed audio, which in a live music setting is going to lend itself to having a much more impactful audio soundtrack. So, well, talking about this as a film now, I was struck that the sound is outstanding on it. I think the video is very good, actually. I got to agree with both of you as far as, you know, the camera does jump around a bit too much for my liking, because I think we've all had that opportunity to be there in person. And naturally, whoever's playing a solo, that's where your eye's going to go to and kind of hang out and watch that person. And I think if they bounce around too much, it can be a distraction from that. And it's not just that someone playing a solo. It could be just a moment where, you know, Bruce is talking to the crowd. I mean, there's a whole host of things that you can tie into that. I think the most exciting moment, as far as just pure excitement, is the beginning of the film, going into Aces High. I think that was a masterstroke by them. As a matter of fact, I remember when I watched it, and unfortunately, I was not able to see it at the movies. I'm a single dad, and, you know, sometimes the needs of my children can trump plans to go do something, and that's what happened with me. So I was actually looking forward to watching this, and I remember putting it in, and that whole buildup at the beginning was just it actually gave me little goosebumps. And so I find myself gravitating, as far as like the whole concert portion of it, to the beginning of the film. And really beyond that, as much as I enjoyed the concert clips, I find myself more focused on the documentary portion. I like to catch all the little nibbles and bits of what's going on behind the scenes, and just really to hear some of these individuals I've seen off and on through the years really have an opportunity to be on stage with the camera and talk a little bit more about what they're doing and their role and so on. It's good that everyone knows what they do.
All right, so like I was saying, two things that really caught my attention about this film were, and the first fact I really like, is that this film is 16 different locations for 16 different songs. So it gives you a basic outlook of different Maiden fans from all around the world. And one thing that I noticed that I found, which all these 16 songs had, was that amazing crowd participation and the enthusiasm and excitement in the crowd. It's just there. So that part was really amazing. The second part, which surprised me a bit, and I was also a little bit disappointed, was the fact that Yannick Gers was playing Adrian Smith's Moonchild solo. I didn't see that coming, because I guess Yannick was playing a fair bit of solos anyway. I really like Yannick Gers as a guitarist. Not slamming Yannick here, but I really think he's a great guitarist, and I like his own solos for the songs which he writes, especially the Dance of Death one. But I think I don't quite agree with his solos and Revelations. I didn't really like that one. I prefer Adrian's original. But anyway, that's all fine. But I was a bit surprised when he took the Moonchild solo. So that was a bit weird for me. But nonetheless, I think he did a pretty decent job on that solo too. So moving on to the different formats that this film was released in. There were three formats, basically. I'm talking about video. We have the standard edition DVD, which is a double disc DVD. One DVD is for the film, and the other is the bonus footage of the concerts, the entire songs from start to finish. And the second edition was the deluxe edition DVD, which had a 30-page booklet, a color booklet, and I happen to have both these editions. Which the second one's really great, the deluxe edition. It's the 30-page booklet is really great. There's some really cool photos and stuff that you get to see, so that's really cool. And otherwise it's pretty much similar to the standard edition. And the third one was the Blu-ray disc, which Sean is talking about, high definition. So those were the three different editions that this film was released in. And then, of course, we have the audio CD, Flight 666, the original soundtrack. So we're going to move on to that and talk about the audio a little. For me particularly, I think this was a brilliant, brilliant mix. Kevin Shirley, again, doing a great job on his live mixing. Because what we heard on Death on the Road was absolutely unbelievable. I thought that was a fantastic live album because of the production. Phenomenal production. I love the mix on that. Maiden generally have very good live mixes, but I didn't quite enjoy the live at Donington and a real live one and a real dead one. I think the band performed absolutely brilliantly, but I think I didn't really like the way those live albums sounded. But nonetheless, I think the mixing that we see on Rock and Rio, Death on the Road, absolutely brilliant. And Flight 666 lived up to that expectation. So again, I was very happy with the mixing, and I think Kevin Shirley doing a great job. What about you, Sean?
Well, again, like I said earlier, I consider the audio to be very powerful. And, good to remember our good friend that runs the sound for Iron Maiden. I'm going to quiz you. Dan, I'm going to put you in the spot. Who is Iron Maiden sound man?
Ooh, is it Doug Hall?
Yes, sir, it is Doug Hall. And I think Doug Hall... Good job. Okay, all right. This guy knows his stuff, of course.
Maintaining a little bit of street cred.
Doug Hall, by the way, is a great guy. He's an American, and he's been mixing the band forever since nearly the very, very beginning. And In defense of some of the other live recordings, I think the mix by him has always been a very gold standard, if you will. What has varied has been the production on the mixing of the tracks in the studio. So I think going back to Real Live One, Real Dead One, and so on, I could be wrong, but I think they were kind of in transition with Martin Birch going out. And I think Nigel Green, their engineer, and Steve Harris having much more input at that juncture. And when Kevin came aboard for the Brave New World album in 2000, there was an immediate up ratchet of the punch. And I thought Brave New World had an insanely good mix. And that definitely, production for myself, I mean, certainly you can't substitute great material. But if you have great material, then you add in great production, and the production meaning the quality of the sound, the EQ of the instruments, the volume, and so on, that really adds to the experience for many people, myself included. This Blu-ray, I have it on Blu-ray. I find it to be more impressive audio-wise and visually even. So I think that's very good. And going back to Doug for a second, statements on an earlier episode of our podcast, when we were talking about the Number of the Beast, I made several references to the Beast Over Hammersmith video, and also they released it on audio. If you guys have Eddie's archive out there, you'll know what I'm talking about. That is by far my favorite Iron Maiden live recording ever. And that one, interestingly, is Doug actually produced that one. As a matter of fact, I was talking to Doug about it, and he gave me a business card, actually. He's actually always interested in mixing live recordings of other bands. So if you have one out there, you might want to reach out to him. Just get in touch with me if you want to get the info on how to reach him. That mix, I found it to be very dead on close to how it really sounds at the show. And I thought Martin did a great job on Live After Death. And I think Kevin, I think Kevin did a great job of mixing the band to sound like they do now in these large arenas. And he was able to preserve that impact and really translate the power of the performance into this video / Blu-ray format. So it resonates really well in the home, on the cinema screen, and so on. What do you guys think?
Well, I got to agree with you and say that Kevin Shirley nailed it on this one. In one of my past podcasts, I described Iron Maiden, the band, as an all-star team. There is so much, talent with each member and the instruments that they play, or Bruce as a vocalist. And it's really unique to be able to listen to a live recording and focus on the bass and pick it out. Focus on the drums and pick it out. You can hear each of the individual solos, and you can hear the little flourishes that they do on the guitar. Definitely a nice mix of the three guitarists. And the other thing that stood out for me about the mix was that it was a good mix of both, the band and their music, but also the crowd as well. And that's, that's a fine line to walk, because a lot of times when you listen to live recordings, you want that live feel, but the crowd can drown out the band or drown out the vocalists. And really good balance on this.
Yeah, I'd quite agree with both of you guys on, on some of the stuff that you guys said. The thing that really stood out for me was the way, the eventual sound turned out. It just gave a heavier feel, like you mentioned, Sean, earlier. The entire live album has a very heavy feel to it. It's just because of the way the guitar sounds. So, again, I think that, again, was brilliant mixing. And I really enjoy this live album a lot, and I still listen to it a lot. And I guess that's about it for this episode. We're done with the Flight 666. So, Dan, how do you feel being on the episode?
You know, it was great. And, you know, if I can, I want to ask you guys if you are aware of any Easter eggs on these DVDs. I wasn't able to find any.
You know, I wish I had the time and the energy and resources to hunt for them, because I'm sure that would be fun to find them. Why don't we do this? I have not, to answer your question. And I want to call you Dan the Man, by the way. Is that okay?
That is fantastic. That's what they call me.
Because I am
work,
proud to say that I am currently downloading all the episodes of the Iron Maiden review onto my iPod. So I noticed that you list yourself as Dan the Man. So
excellent. Thank you.
So I would like to invite everyone listening to this who have stumbled on Easter eggs, not just on this, but of, you know, anything. Please get in touch with us on that. You can do that. Probably the easiest way is through Facebook, because we do have a Facebook page, and you can share that with us. But I'm not actually aware of any. Can you confirm if there are any on there, Mr. Pereira?
To be honest, neither am I. I haven't found any so far. So, but if anyone else has, you know, please send us a mail on the Iron Maiden podcast at gmail.com. And yeah, we'll discuss that in the next episode. Moving to the Iron Maiden news desk, they've started the Final Frontier World Tour 2011. They put out the set list, which I think is brilliant. They've got 5 new songs from the new album, which is Satellite 15, The Final Frontier. They're doing El Dorado, they're doing Coming Home, they're doing The Talisman, and they're doing When the Wild Wind Blows. The only regret that I have is that Starblind isn't on there. But other than that, I think the set list is absolutely great. A good blend of some of their older stuff, and they've got some of the newer stuff on there. You know, post the Bruce and Adrian reunion with the band. So that's really great.
It's funny you should say that, because when I saw the set list, I also saw it. And when I saw they were playing Where the Wild Wind Blows, I thought of you immediately, because I know that's probably your favorite song. I remember how much you raved about that when we talked about it recently.
Yeah, that song, definitely. I think it's a song that...
They were listening, Rowan. They were listening to you. They said, we're going to go do that song because the Iron Maiden podcast and just loves it so much. We owe it to them and all the Iron Maiden fans to get out there and play that.
Hopefully they were. If they were, I hope they do Seven Son of a Seven Son at some point of time, because I think that's another brilliant song.
How's that drive going to amass the army of petitions and sign-ons to have Iron Maiden play that song?
I haven't even initiated it, unfortunately, but I hope...
That's the fearless leader. He has not initiated it.
Well, moving back to the news desk, the new Ed First One, which is with the Final Frontier library, I think that's pretty standard. It kind of looks like the Somewhere Back in Time World Tour Ed First One, but just with some of the Final Frontier artwork. But nonetheless, it looks quite beautiful. So I guess Maiden are done with February. They have 3 shows left. They have 3 or 4 shows left. I think they have 3 or 4 Australian shows left. They're done with Moscow, Singapore, and those 2 Indonesian shows. Again, I guess Indonesia and Singapore, they're playing for the first time. I don't think they've done either of these places before. So again, Maiden using their jet and to Maidenize new territory, which is really cool. So again, Ed First One making all of this possible for them. But anyway, moving back to the set list, I wanted to ask you guys what you thought about it. What about you, Dan?
Well, I think it's great that they're basically playing half of the new album on this tour. I really liked it. I agree with you. Starblind is an amazing song, and I would have liked to have seen that one in the set list. But, you know, playing 50% of the new album, I can't complain too much. You know, I was lucky enough to catch them on the earlier leg of this tour before the new album had come out, and they had only released El Dorado as a single. And, you know, I get a lot of emails through my podcast from younger fans that haven't had the opportunity to see Maiden live yet. So I need to throw a plug in there. If there's anybody that hasn't had the opportunity to see them, and, you know, if for some reason you're on the fence, go. It's an amazing show, tremendous production. The band still sounds great, and it'll ruin every other concert you see for you.
Great advice from Dan. Honestly, if there are a few of you listening who haven't, I'm pretty sure it'd be a few who haven't seen Maiden live yet. Please, if you do get the opportunity, go and see them. It'll probably be one of the best experiences of your life. Something that you probably tell your grandkids about. It's like one of those things. So please, if you do get the opportunity, if Maiden's playing somewhere near you, please go ahead and, you know, if you have the chance to see them, please go and you'll enjoy the show. Trust me on that. Anyway, moving back to setlist about Starblind. One of my friends made it to the Singapore show, which I was supposed to go to, but I couldn't make it, unfortunately. Anyway, he made it to the Singapore show and he had a chance to meet Adrian. And he asked Adrian some pretty interesting questions. When he asked him why they weren't doing Starblind, he told me Adrian had the most disappointing look on his face. So obviously, I guess Adrian, there was some talk about Starblind being played, but unfortunately, it never made it to the set list. So yeah, like I said, it would have been great if it did make it to the set list, but then there's nothing to complain about because I guess I love almost everything that Maiden does.
Well, I mean, I'm hoping that they do Isle of Avalon too. Although they are playing Coming Home, so that's a good thing. But Isle of Avalon, I thought, would be a special experience in concert, the way that builds up and all the different moods and tones in that song.
I would agree.
I was hoping they would actually play it straight through, like the last album. I would be very fine if they just played start to finish and added in a few. I really enjoyed when they did that in the Matter of Life and Death tour. So
yeah, who knows? That was a great album, and I think it was worth hearing the entire album live. Obviously, yeah, Isle of Avalon, like you said, it reminds you of, you know, some of the bass bits in Seven Son of a Seven Son. Yeah, so that would be a great song to hear live. There's one more leg, I guess, left of the tour, which would be the final leg, if there is one, I'm not sure. But if there is, I think that would be the final leg. And yeah, if they could put Starblind and, you know, songs like Isle of Avalon on that, that would be great. But I think there's very little scope for that. I doubt if they would have to, you know, jumble some of the songs, I guess it would be... you know, the other songs, not songs from the Final Frontier, the post Bruce and Adrian reunion stuff, and probably some of the older stuff that they're doing. But I doubt they would jumble anything from the Final Frontier. But if they do, that'd be great. I'd like to hear Starblind. And if they'd, I hope one song that they don't jumble is When the Wild Wind Blows, because, I mean, that is a phenomenal song. It's what makes the album one of the best. So I guess that's about it from the Iron Maiden News Desk. Dan and Sean, is there anything that you guys would like to add before we wrap this up?
Yeah, I just want to thank Dan for joining us. And certainly I look forward to continuing to listen to your podcast. I think anybody that takes any time out to try to bring any kind of perspective and entertainment to Iron Maiden fans in this format is doing a wonderful thing. And I mean, at the end of the day, we're all Iron Maiden fans, and we have different ways of expressing that. And I would like to just say that the band I'm in, Run to the Hills, we're getting ready to start our world tour in March. We've made the decision that predominantly for at least this year, we're going to dedicate performances to raising money for the Ronnie James Dio Stand Up and Show Cancer Foundation. We started doing this actually back in December. So if you would like to, and I was joking about World Tour, we're just talking the Northeast United States, maybe Southern Canada, we'll see. But if you would like more information on that, all you have to do is, I would recommend Facebook. Just go Run to the Hills Iron Maiden Tribute Band on Facebook, and you'll find us and like us and suggest us and all that. And you can see more details, and you can certainly catch our video and audio clips, and you can certainly evaluate if you think we're okay or not. We value feedback, the good, bad, and the ugly. And I want to say this has been a fun episode once again. I look forward to the others. I also like to say that Rowan and myself are getting ready to give birth, give an accident of birth to Headbangers Inn in the near future. So stay tuned for all that. And please do support Dan and every Maiden Out fan out there. I command you to go to iTunes and download the Iron Maiden Review. Of course, the Iron Maiden podcast, and our good friend who does the other one called, if I have it correct, Maiden Fan Podcast, which actually I started listening to that very early on, and he coincidentally lives not too far from me. And I was listening to it one day, and all of a sudden my name popped up on it. I was like, oh, that's pretty neat. So that was kind of a cool thing. And he's a good guy, actually. And let's just all support each other. And, Rowan, I'd like to thank you for taking the time out, of course, to organize this. And I promise that if you ever decide to actually take the initiative to get a petition going for Iron Maiden to play Seven Son of a Seven Son, I promise you that I will sign that petition.
Thanks for the help, Sean. Actually, you know what? I'm actually considering doing it right now. So, before wrapping this up again, I really want to thank Dan for coming on the show. I think he's a brilliant podcaster. The thing that I really love about his podcast is that he doesn't use music. He produces the sounds himself. So that I love that aspect of it. And I think he's a brilliant podcaster. The the outlook that he gives you, and you know, it's just brilliant. Some of the stuff that I've heard, I think, about two episodes of his, and I especially the Number of the Beast one, that absolutely blew me away. I thought that was one of the best episodes I've ever heard, and I thought, what better person to bring on for the ninth episode other than a hardcore Iron Maiden fan. So again, I really want to thank Dan for being on the show. And to anyone who's listening to this podcast, anyone and everyone, please go on to iTunes and download the Iron Maiden Review. Brilliant, brilliant podcast. Something that I've listened to myself, and I think it's phenomenal. So, Dan, anything that you'd like to say before we wrap up?
Well, yeah, I'm just here with a huge ego. I want to thank you guys for the compliments, and thank you for the opportunity to hang out and participate in this podcast. You know, I've said in some of my previous podcasts that one of the reason that I started the Iron Maiden Review was to reach out and have that sense of community and connection with other fans, because a lot of my immediate circle of friends, not too many of them are Iron Maiden fans, and my wife kind of tolerates my Iron Maiden addiction as best she can. It's tough to find a lot of local Iron Maiden fans for me. So the opportunity to hang out with you guys has been great. And if anybody goes to iTunes and downloads the Iron Maiden Review, you'll notice kind of an interesting mix. You know, like Rowan, like you were saying, the first few episodes, I didn't really incorporate any audio clips, and then in some of the two most recent episodes, I tried to work in some audio clips, but have them be relevant to what I was saying, and maybe point out some different things about the songs, not only my favorite parts, but maybe pick apart the structure of the songs a little bit. So that's what I've been working on. And thanks to you guys, and I'm looking forward to the new podcast, Headbangers Inn.
Thank you, Dan. Again, I haven't heard the latest two episodes that you've put out, but I'm going to go right now and download them. And I'm urging everyone else who's listening to this podcast, please go out and download episodes from the Iron Maiden Review. It's a great show. If you're an Iron Maiden fan, you'll absolutely love it. Okay. Anyway, like I was saying about the Headbangers, and I'm really sorry we couldn't put that out sooner. I know we promised an episode somewhere in January, but we couldn't get to doing it because Sean and I have both been really busy. So we're going to put out the first episode of the Headbangers and podcast as soon as we can. But till then, stay tuned, listen to the Iron Maiden podcast, and you can follow us on Twitter. And like us on Facebook if you want to stay updated with us. And visit our website, www.theironmaidenpodcast.mypodcast.com, and leave your feedback on the episode. If you have any other feedback that you'd like to leave us personally, please send us a mail at theironmaidenpodcast@gmail.com. I want to thank everyone for listening. It's been great having Dan on the show. Again, fantastic doing an episode with Sean, my partner in crime. So I guess that's about it. I want to thank again everyone for listening. Please stay tuned. We'll come with episode 10 shortly. And up the irons.
Up the irons, mateys.
Up the irons.